Good evening. It's just after 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night. It's a great start to the show, isn't it, when you can't even get the first words out properly? I'm John Hindorf, live from London, and alongside me in the studio is Tim Gray.
Good evening. Well, you're not the only one who struggled to get his words out correctly. If you watch NASCAR on Fox on Sunday night, the start of the Daytona 500, and who nearly corpsed in the middle of his boogity, boogity, boogity.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Didn't have the sound up at that point. More from the Daytona 500, of course. Many of you may have watched the Channel 5 coverage that was on from midnight.
Many of you would have been in bed.
And those of you who TiVo'd it or Sky Plus'd it to the end probably still don't know who won because they went off the air with...
But don't worry, because we'll tell you.
Yeah, we'll tell you later. It was very good. You missed a very good ending to it.
Last five laps, absolutely superb.
Shame you missed them. On a packed show tonight, Tim, we have...
We have a couple of guests, as usual. This week, Liz Halliday will be talking to us about cars and horses and the Sebring 12-hour race.
And her plans for 2007, as ever. Once we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, the emails have come flooding in. If you'd like to ask a question to Liz, it's studio@0157.org. As well as Liz, we have...
At the weekend, it was the first time that the Rally Norway had been part of the World Rally Championship.
Ah, yes, yes.
And one of the competitors from that rally will be joining us. That'll be Mr. Tony Jardine.
TJ.
Is also here to talk about the Bridgestone e-reporter competition.
We've covered that the last couple of years, haven't we?
It's third season, and we'll be asking him about that.
And some new developments this year, which will involve Midweek Motorsport and possibly our listeners as well.
Yes, we'll be telling you how to enter the Bridgestone e-reporter competition as well, which is all good. And we have our usual features, including Declan Brennan with his ear on the oval. And we start with the news.
I know, before that, I've got to say, those of you who missed Call My Hoof last week, but enjoyed, and we have had a lot of emails saying how much the Deal of the Century was enjoyed, did make everyone giggle.
From Norwich, it's the quiz of the week.
You didn't pause long enough there. From Norwich. It's the quiz of the week. I think what the Americans would call a series break. Are we on Call My Hoof at the moment?
We are, yes.
So when is it likely to be back?
It'll be back towards the end of March.
Okay.
Once we've got all our specials and weeks off out of the way.
And we will come back with the letter N on Call My Hoof.
All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
But as ever, we start things off, as tradition dictates, with the motorsport headlines. Tim Gray, what do you have for us?
Well, unfortunately, this week's news is going to be slightly out of sequence due to the fact that I couldn't print it off, so I'm having to read it off the screen. We have a printer error, and if anyone knows how to fix that, then do get in touch. But we will start with Formula One news, and the news that Fernando Alonso says it wasn't his fault that Michael Schumacher quit Formula One. Schumacher said several times in recent years that he'd hang up his helmet when a faster, younger rival came along, and Alonso, who's only 25...
So he was younger.
13 years younger.
Mm-hmm.
And won the Drivers' Championship twice, in 2005 and 2006. He's now said, Michael stopped because different things motivate him now, such as his family. He must have decided to retire before the start of the 2006 season. Well, I'm joined now by our F1 correspondent, Nick Damon.
Hello there, and I'd like to wonder, we'll have to listen to the rest of the programme, because I'm one of those many people who have no idea who won the Daytona 500 thanks to Marvel's Sky Plus problems.
In fairness, it wasn't Sky Plus problems, because Sky Plus made sure you got the extra hour on the end. It was just, I'm afraid, Channel 5.
Final 10 minutes.
Yeah, Channel 5 problems. You can't blame the technology. You work in that industry, mate. Garbage in, garbage out.
You see some of the shows, have you?
Operator error, I think. So you didn't see the last five laps?
No. No, I was sitting down and watching it Monday afternoon. It was it always looks interesting because Tim had tipped me off. It was a good race.
That was a brilliant race.
And I think he always must have about to really work it out. And I got this thing saying end of recorded program. So I went off to a well-known website beginning with Autosport and found that had been very good. And I sat there kind of fuming for a while. But back to the main story, of course, about Alonso and Michael Schumacher. And I think it's I think the interview. I don't believe that Michael had decided to retire at the beginning of last season. I think things conspired against him, and he decided it was the best way out. And I think it's probably going to be proven to be possibly a bit of a mistake, I think, in the long run. I don't think that Ferrari would be anything like as good without him this year as they would have been with him. I think Alonso, I'm probably having to answer one of the myriad of pointless questions you get thrown at me by journalists, mainly Italian, and he's come up with a reasonably eloquent answer because he's a reasonably intelligent guy.
Right, okay. Moving on.
Trident Racing is ready to hit the track again as the long GP2 season is set to start this week with the first test session on the French Paul Ricard circuit. I told you this was out of sequence. The Italian team returned to the series after a really positive debut year with innovations in both their driver and technical lineup. They'll be driven by two talented young rookies, Pastor Maldonado and Kohei Hirata.
How is that innovative? What's an innovative driver like? They're a cat and a chicken. You know, it's not innovative, it's just different.
Yes, they're two rookies.
Well, like, everyone was a rookie 2 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. His name was Pastor, by the way.
Pastor Maldonado, yes.
Pastor Maldonado?
Yes.
Is that the bit with the sausage in it?
No.
No, okay. He's the man of the cloth.
Oh, Pastor.
Yes.
Not Pasta.
Correct.
Okay.
He's done Renault World Series by Renault Series in the past.
Right.
And he
Powered by Nissan.
Yes. He caused a very big accident in Monaco a couple of years ago.
Right.
While Kohei Hirata ran in the F3 Euro Series last year.
Kohei?
And, yes.
That means student in Japanese.
Yes.
Sensei being the master and Kohei being the student.
There we are then. He's a Toyota development driver.
Right.
And he's got some experience in Europe.
I've got one question for you, Tim, actually, because you are the king of GP2.
He is.
Do they ever get to test anywhere apart from Paul Ricard?
They do indeed, on the 8th and 9th.
I'm pleased
of March.
You asked him that. He was just about to wrap that feature up there.
in the words of Yes Minister, I'm very pleased you asked that question, because I now can answer it in a long-winded way which actually doesn't give you an answer. March the 8th and 9th is when they're going to the Circuit de Catalunya.
Right. And?
Well, that's not Paul Ricard.
No, it's Barcelona.
Oh, yes.
Right. Okay.
And at the end of last season they tested at Valencia.
Okay.
But it is mostly Paul Ricard, isn't it?
They probably do about 2/3 of their testing at Paul Ricard. Yes.
Is that because they don't race there?
They do race there, do they?
No, they don't race there.
No.
They were going to race there,
but they were also going to race somewhere else, and then they decided not to.
Okay, move on. Can we move on now?
I'm busy with A1GP.
That's very true. I'm beginning to lose the will to live, and we're only 5 minutes into the show.
After having drawn attention to himself in the 70s and 80s as driver,
right?
Ernesto Catella has now become...
he drew attention to himself as a driver of
yes.
What?
Where? When?
Well, he was a cab driver in Rome.
Again?
I have no idea where Ernesto Catella drove. I'd imagine Italian Formula 3, possibly, in the 70s.
God.
He would have been one of a very small field, probably.
He has since been involved in... developing young drivers, and some of his young charges include Esteban Tuero,
Brazilian,
mm-hmm. Enrique Bernaldi,
Brazilian,
Alessandro Zanardi,
who's Italian,
Jano Trulli,
also Italian with a Finnish name
or Czech name, and Giancarlo Fisichella,
who's Italian. Yeah, well done. He has been involved with them, or he's said hello to them a couple of times.
He's been involved with them, according to his press release, and now he's decided to step again into the motor racing world with new team, Elk Motorsport.
Elk.
E-L-K, Elk.
Fantastic.
We've got the answer to, when everyone tries to swerve past, do all the cars tip over?
Well, apparently they've got to do a test before they're allowed in.
Yes.
All of that about. And he's going to enter what series then, Tim?
Well, his goal is GP2, but obviously...
He has to work up to that.
It's something he has to work up to. So, this year he's going to be...
Why, is it a bit too dear?
Aha!
I'm here all week. Wait, this is a chicken.
Try the veal. And he's going to work his way up to it starting in what? Skill Extric?
The F3000 Italia series.
Well, actually, Skill Extric is actually more competitive than that.
That's a series of 14-year-old F3000 cars, isn't it?
It is the cars which once upon a time used the...
The only carbon fibre cars have got roughed.
the Lola B 99.50, I think it was.
99 being the operative number there.
Yes. Except this year they're not using that. They're now using, well,
it was too modern. They used a Radar D91.
A modification of that car, but with a new Mechachrome 500 brake horsepower engine, new aero kit, and the winner of the championship does get an F1 super license.
Fabulous. Did you get an F1 drive to go with it?
Hardly, I would
have
thought.
No, he gets a GP2 test to go with it.
Oh, good. Very nice.
Moving on. That was that's a nonsense story, by the way.
I'd love to move on. I can't now get the thing to scroll down the screen.
All right, okay. Technical difficulties
wait
here, dear listener.
Catch up here.
There you go.
Now, I've got an A1 GP thing on. It's quite interesting.
Meanwhile, I can't... Ooh.
Oh, what?
Well, is it Bruno Junqueira going to drive Brazil?
Microsoft Excel, hang on.
Oh, dear.
Let's talk about Bruno Junqueira, because that is later on in the news, so...
That's one of the most interesting things I think has actually come through this week, to be honest.
Which is?
Well, he's actually going to drive A1 GP for Brazil.
Ooh.
Because he's about as an established driver as you can get. I mean, obviously he had that big accident last year, I mean, he missed half the season.
Yes.
And it's very much... You'd have to say it's not a step forward.
No.
So you kind of wonder why he's doing it.
He's got a lot to lose, hasn't he? And we have seen in the past, Nick, that established drivers who have stepped into A1 GP, some of them have struggled, and I think particularly of some of the Americans, and Thomas Schechter, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Didn't exactly cover himself in glory. Did Jimmy Vassar have a little go?
A little go, that American car wasn't very good. Verstappen was okay. But I mean, I suppose you're unclear, I think, am I right in saying he's not actually got a Newman Haas contract, has he, for this year?
No.
I think he's still fishing about for a champ car.
He's casting in the wind.
I suppose perhaps he must think that getting a bit of PR on the front line. And obviously, I suppose he thinks it's not too much of a gamble, but he does know the 3,000 cars it's based on. Of course, most of us at A1 GP cars very, very different from the 3,000 cars that he does have, obviously, ancestry with. But I just think it's interesting. I mean, that's a big name, a really big name to drop down to take the decision to run in A1.
Interestingly, guys, I mean, the first season we were talking, there was all sorts of people being linked with various cars. You know, Dan Weldon for the UK, various people for the US car, and I think they've all been frightened off now because they've seen actually how difficult that car is to set up and drive.
The problem is. They've been frightened off by, I believe, the organisation. You know, we obviously know people who work for A1 GP, and it is a fabulous series, but it has got a number of very key problems in its, I suppose, promotional organisational structure and also the way the teams are run. And I think the idea of being a level playing field just doesn't exist.
There are some anomalies.
And, you know, it's got the same problem as Tim has pointed out very accurately before, that one team appears to be able to dominate each year, much as has happened in Formula 3000 again. It's always Tim said this before, I think, on this programme, that there always used to be a golden chassis. And it appears, I'm not having a go at Nico van Hülkenberg, but it appears that this year it's the Germans and David Sears who've got the golden chassis.
Have the golden chassis.
Whereas last year it was Dams. So, and this is again an issue which caused problems in 3000 prior to the GP2 era. You know, when a level playing field series suddenly didn't become that way because someone found something, or there was just this magic chassis. I'm not in any way implying there's cheating going on.
There's just one chassis that's better than the
other. It's the chassis that Dams had for 3 years when it was the Lola 9650, and Supernova had for 3 years when it was 9950, and Nordic had for 3 years when it was the 0250.
Right.
And it's very, very odd. I mean,
so what you're saying is that one of those chassis each year just seems to be better than all, and I presume they keep the same tub for the whole year, Nick, do they?
They do indeed, yeah. I mean, I think it's either that, or there is a single piece of setup which somebody finds, which I find hard to believe in what was quite a limited setup environment within the...
And specifically with the difference in the tracks that they go to.
I was going to say, that is the biggest level.
It's odd, and I think, you know, realistically, if you were Dan Weldon, or, you know, not Dan, as Dan's got to drive, I mean, Darren Manning came in and did very well, I think. You know, and I've said before, I believe that as he's free, Darren should definitely get the run over Robbie Kerr every time.
Well, he rather showed up the guys who'd driven the car before. Came into the team without knowing very much about it and did
very
well.
Of course, has got a lot of 3,000 experience.
He has.
But whereas you look and you mentioned, you know, Jimmy Vassar and a number of other, you know, sort of American-based stars, who've come in and done nothing at all. In fact, been worse than the 19-year-old, you know, Formula Renault driver who's been there before.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't happen.
No.
You know, that's not... You know, these guys are good. You know, they're not where they are because they're not good. You know, and they have experience in time, which would mean they should be half a second faster just on experience.
I think we should get Johnny Herbert to drive the JBR car.
I think it might be quite fun, actually.
You'd struggle to convince him to do it.
I mean, I think, you know, perhaps we should have a chat about this when the season ends in April, but I think that A1GP is a really, really good series that's missing two or three areas, which are, I believe, could be its undoing. When it shouldn't, it should carry on going from strength to strength. I think at the moment it's in drift.
Well, you mentioned the organisational side of A1GP, and they have decided that they're going to restructure that and implement a regional business structure to continue their business growth over the coming years.
What? With they're still based in South Africa, or what?
Four individual territories responsible for expanding the series.
Right.
Peter Silver, the new CEO, will oversee four companies to manage the interests in America, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa and Asia.
So are we looking at subsidiaries then?
No, just different territories that are going to be responsible for franchising, finding the races, promoting the races, etc., and looking for, presumably, for seat holders. Is that how it's going to work?
Correct. David Clare will be responsible for the Asian market.
Right.
Scott Hollingsworth will do America. Bruce Holmes will do Europe. And Peter Silver himself will do the Middle East and Africa.
Right.
The promotion needs 10 step-ups. And the teams need about one step up. Because the teams are below GP2 by a way at the moment, in organisation, in my opinion. And they should be on a par with that.
Staying with A1GP just briefly, and Team Canada has announced that Kevin Lacroix is to join its driver line-up.
You know,
Starmaster?
He did do Starmaster.
Yeah.
Starting with... Durban, South Africa.
I knew I'd seen his name on a timing and scoring monitor, and as there are very few American series that I would follow, then it had to be Starmaster, really. Or
it was
probably
the runner-up and rookie of the year in Starmaster last year, and previously raced in the Formula BMW USA Championship, where he was also runner-up and won four races. He'll be joining James Hinchcliffe, who...
Is a star.
Has now done so many rookie sessions that he's not a rookie anymore.
Right.
Makes sense. Lacroix. And,
The good thing you can say about Lacroix is, having driven in the Star Mazda, the Formula Mazda series last year, he will be good at avoiding accidents and picking his way through carnage. And
really?
He should be excellent on restarts.
Because
they used to have three or four of them every race in Star Mazda last year.
Every other lap, in fact.
Yeah, they would seem that way, yes.
He has tested the A1GP car already.
Did he say it was awesome, man?
That was
dude.
Last July,
really?
When he and Hinchcliffe went to Pembrey.
Nice.
That well-known Canadian circuit.
Moving on.
I'm really looking forward.
Oh, we're not moving on, apparently.
I'm really excited to have this opportunity to drive for A1 Team Canada, Lacroix commented.
I'm sure he did. Pembrey.
International Formula Master Series.
Ah, right.
That's another 3,000, isn't it, thing?
This is only 2,000, to be honest.
Is the thing that was launched at the Autosport Show, the bright orange thing, isn't it? Which was... some Italian guy launched it. I seem to remember
it's
you...
It's N-Technology.
It's N-Tech, it is. That's exactly. Well,
behind Alfa Romeo's touring car efforts.
Is it powered by an Alfa Romeo engine, by any chance? Okay.
I think it's powered by a Renault engine.
By Nissan.
Check that.
Is it going to happen?
They've announced that Johnny Cecotto will be racing.
Isn't he 106?
Presumably.
He's 17.
Junior.
Oh, the baby one. All right, sorry.
Baby Cecotto. He's already done German Formula BMW, Formula Renault Euro Series, Formula 3 and Formula 3000.
He must have a good chance because he's the only driver.
There are other drivers involved, including David Epton, who
Formula
Renault. Both know from Formula Renault in the UK.
Where are they running, Tim?
They'll be supporting all the rounds of the World Touring Car Championship in Europe.
Oh, is that one? All right. Yeah.
All right, okay.
Yes, that's the one. It's the one that replaces the Formula 3000 Master Series.
Right.
So this is a 2-litre engine in a what chassis?
In a Tatas chassis.
Right. So it's like a Formula Renault then?
It's like Formula Renault, but not.
Okay. And it's his name is Sips, isn't it?
Mauro Sips. Mauro Sips.
So it's a Renault chassis with a Renault engine, but it's not a Formula Renault.
No, it's a Tata chassis.
Oh, but yeah, but they do the Renault chassis, don't they?
Yes, but the Renault chassis looks a whole lot better than the IMF.
I just don't see why we need another series. Anyway, carry on.
Former Formula One world champion Jacques Villeneuve is focused on making the move to NASCAR next season.
No, he's not. He's focused on Le Mans this year with Peugeot.
I thought he was focused on doing his pop rock album.
Panda Drive this year.
I don't think he's very focused at all, Tim, do you?
Speaking of the launch of his new album on Monday...
He sat down there and he's gone, you know, he's strumming away on his guitar, you know, going, you know, oh dear.
He said he may consider racing in ARCA, trucks, or the Busch Series before moving up to NASCAR Nextel Cup. That's the main plan, he was quoted as saying in the Toronto Sun.
I never think a year in Busch does you any harm, to be honest.
Craig Pollock.
Sorry?
If I see him do truck, that'd be a laugh. They go some really ropey old ovals. That'd be a cool thing. It'd rain his ego in to go there, that's for sure.
What's the manager said?
Craig Pollock said he's very close to lining up a title sponsor for Villeneuve's NASCAR ride.
Really?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then again, he was going to win 8 Grand Prix his first year at BAR as well.
Yes. Some people have said that Jacques Villeneuve is too old.
How old is he?
He's 35.
Well, for a NASCAR driver.
Spring chicken for
NASCAR. Well, it's much more of a young man's game now, in fairness, than it ever was.
Dale Jarrett is 50.
That blokey Hilton was 72.
Martin's 48.
Yeah, but in fairness, there's a lot of people at the head of the field who are a lot younger than that. The new generation of NASCAR. NASCAR, the next generation.
Pollock reckons that Villeneuve has 15 seasons in NASCAR ahead of him.
Yeah, okay.
Hurrah for us.
All in one day. And... You're running out of news now,
aren't you? No, I'm going to give you another quote from this.
All right, if you must.
At the Daytona 500, this is Pollock again. At the Daytona 500, it was blatantly obvious what you need to do. You can't be out there as a single guy on a single team in a single car, or you'll end up like Mark Martin.
What, coming second?
You've got to have your friends out there. His challenge is to go into something totally different, and he's absolutely determined that it's going to be NASCAR.
Well, let's hope that Molson or the other one, Labatt's, have got enough money, shall we?
Tiago Montero.
He's going to do sports cars.
T-shirt.
Announced this week that he will not take up any more offers from Formula One. We said that last week,
actually. Is that because he hasn't got any offers from Formula One?
DailySportsCar.com reported Tiago Montero's been speaking to some sports car teams.
He's now looking seriously to Champ Car, the World Touring Car Championship, and... possibly racing for Swiss Spirit in the Garage LMP1.
So what you're saying is he's looking at either a front-wheel drive tin top or a rear-wheel drive sports car or an open-wheeler in America. So basically he's looking at anything. Anything.
Rearrange this into a well-known phrase or saying, straws at clutching.
The Portuguese driver also confirmed he's received a proposal to drive for ASM Team Racing for Portugal with Miguel Paes do Amaral.
In Ooh. What?
At Le Mans.
Oh, at Le Mans. All right, okay. What have they earned? Does it say?
A Lola LMP2 car.
Oh, right, okay.
And it'll be driven by Miguel Angel de Castro and Angel Bueno, who was rubbish in Formula 3000.
Yeah, well, those Lolas are actually just like big Formula 3000 cars with two seats and a bit of bodywork.
Yeah, they've just got mud guards on them,
haven't
they?
Pretty much, yeah.
Britain's Ollie Milroy...
a little karting star.
Friend of the show.
Campaign well with a storming performance in the Winter Cup at Lenato, Italy. At the weekend.
Might I suggest that Cathy has sent this through to us?
He won that race in Formula ICA last year.
He did, I remember.
This year he's moved up to KF1, which is what used to be called Formula A.
Not Kentucky Fried Chicken one, then?
No, indeed not.
And finished 11th in the final. Despite the fact that some of the more experienced runners had 10 years advantage on him. I'm not sure that having 10 years more experience in karting is a great
benefit. Doesn't that kind of mean you've got a bit stalled and you're 37 still doing karting?
Surely it means that you're a bit bigger. I mean,
well, the other thing is, though...
I should start my...
Friends
and a top international competitor and ambassador for the UK.
He won't be listening to this anyway because he's still in Italy at the moment testing for Bridgestone at Agenda.
Very nice.
onto two wheels now, as we've done sports cars, single seaters, touring cars briefly, and karting.
Right.
And former 125cc world champion Paolo Pileri died in Terni in Italy last week, aged 62. After growing up on the Italian motocross scene, Pileri made the switch to circuits in 1971, made his world championship debut on a DRS in 1973. Only 2 years passed before he achieved his first victory in the championship, the 1975 Spanish Grand Prix, and after that he won 7 races in a row on his Morbidelli, landing the world title.
Oh, that's a shame. Our commiserations and consolation to his family and friends, of course. I've been watching a bit of old motorcycling on ESPN Classic. On the five, sorry, no, the 250 race from Silverstone in 81 the other day. And Didier de Radigas was second in the championship. Yeah. He lost the championship at that race because he didn't finish. The bike packed in on him. He's raced at Le Mans in the American Le Mans series as well. That's how I know him. So it's quite funny to sort of say that. And the 125s and the 250s looked even smaller than they are now. They look like models. Sorry, carry on.
Later in his career, he switched to 250cc. He won the 1978 Belgian Grand Prix and 8 subsequent races with 20 other podium finishes from 33 starts. He retired at the age of 35, turning to team management, running Loris Capirossi to successive titles in 1990 and 1991.
That's where I know him from, more than from the racing, in fairness.
And he picked up a 14-year-old in 1993 called Valentino Rossi, who did something later in his career.
Apparently he's going to be the next big thing.
Really? Yeah, I don't believe it.
It's the second bike world champion to die this week, after the 1949 250cc world champion Bruno Ruffo died as well.
Bruno was quite an age, though.
Yes, he was.
He was.
Yeah. He had a good innings, as they say. Is that the end of the news? We've got one more story.
One more story. Okay. March the 24th, 2007.
Yes.
Saturday.
My wife's birthday.
This Saturday, in fact.
No, not March.
Not February, March, sorry. Okay.
It's 4 weeks away still.
Yes, it is. Sorry, my apologies.
But it's the date on which the winners of the 2006 Historic Motorsport Awards will be announced. These highly prestigious awards are part of the Race Retro, the fourth international Historic Motorsport show taking place at Stoneleigh Park.
Just over the road from us.
They're awarding them so late, even the awards are going to be historic, aren't they?
Well, it is the awards season at the moment, though. You know, we've had the Emmys, the Grammys.
The awards season really was November, wasn't it, for motorsport?
Yeah, but everybody looks. Most people do it at this time if you're looking back at the whole of the year, don't they?
That's true.
So motorsport's just a bit odd because we finish our season earlier. We don't actually go to December the 31st.
Among the people in attendance, Richard Atwood, Vic Elford, Jack Sears, Pentti Iricola, Russell Brooks, Paddy Hopkirk, Michel Mouton, Bjorn Valdegaard, Mick Grant, Jim Redman and Charlie Williams.
Fantastic. Have you ever been to that, Nick?
No, I haven't, no.
It's only across the Stoneleigh. It's worth a dodge across, mate.
I'll give it a go.
Well, I think we should have a ride across if we're not to. Will I be back from Sebring or I'll be in St. Pete's, won't I?
You'll be somewhere, yes.
I'm bound to be in between. Oh, no, I think that's the in-between weekend, isn't it? Between Sebring and St. Pete's. So I think we might go to that. If we're not doing anything else,
I should be racing in Southend.
Oh, really?
Radio control cars, obviously.
Of course.
The nominations are Race Meeting of the Year.
Right.
The Goodwood Revival.
Yeah.
The Le Mans Classic.
Yeah.
The Alton Park Gold Cup.
Mm-hmm.
The Silverstone Classic Festival.
Uh-huh.
The VSCCC Red Meeting at Donington Park.
That was very good. I would think it will go to either Goodwood's too obvious. So it'll either go to the Le Mans Classic, because that's only once every 2 years, or the VRSCC's Red Meeting.
Okay. Championship or Series of the Year?
I like the classic sports cars.
Yeah, me too.
The big one. I've seen them. Actually, maybe 2 years ago, but when they had the old Group C's go around, it was
absolutely
great.
Absolutely.
Well, here are the nominations. The FIA Lurani Trophy Formula Junior Championship.
No idea what that is.
Right.
I think that's for old Formula 2 cars.
Tis.
Yes. The Armahagro MSA British Historic Rally Championship.
No.
Right.
The RAC Woodcote Trophy.
Right.
That's one on the same weekend as the
Walter Hayes.
Walter Hayes, isn't it?
I think it is anyway, yeah.
Thoroughbred Grand Prix.
I like Thoroughbred Grand Prix as well, in fairness.
And U2TC.
U2TC, what's that, do we know?
It's Historic Touring Cars, I believe.
I think out of that TJP will win it.
Surely shouldn't you be voting for the one you're actually in, John?
Yes, but that wasn't
that wasn't nominated.
It should have been.
It should have been, absolutely. The Heritage and GT series was fantastic and will be again this year.
Competition Club of the Year.
How many of these are there?
I have no idea.
Can we stop now?
We'll there's pick no out real a need. Few of them.
There's no real need.
Event of the Year. Festival of Speed.
Right.
The Klaus and Rennen Memorial.
Did we just do that?
No, that was a revival. Klaus and Rennen Memorial.
Right.
Tour Britannia.
Right.
Prescott Hill Climb.
Right.
Chelsea Walsh Hill Climb.
100th anniversary of Chelsea Walsh, so difficult to vote against that, but I think Tour Britannia might get it.
Why hasn't it got the Pebble Beach Concours in it? Isn't that the ultimate classic thing?
It's not a race, though, is it?
An event.
It's an event. Like the Festival of Speed, I suppose.
Okay, fine, okay. Can we do... We'll just do one more, because
okay.
I am now... I have now completely lost the will to live.
Oh, John.
Road Rally of the Year, then.
Oh, right, okay.
The London to Brighton Veteran Car Run.
Yes, that's one.
The Modena Centre Ore.
No.
The Rally of the Tests.
Very good, Rally of the Tests.
The Winter Trial. That's the one that runs through Czech Republic.
Was he guilty or not guilty?
And the Tour of Cheshire.
Rally of the Tests for me.
No, none of the Brighton.
Well...
You might be interested in Race Driver of the Year.
No, no, honestly, I'd rather take my liver out with a rusty spoon.
Duncan Dayton's shortlisted.
I'm sure he is, but really, it's not news, is it? It's not news. We'll cover it closer to the time, and we'll have a chat with somebody who knows about this stuff.
Whoever sent me that press release, please make sure you send me the results as well.
Oh, please, please don't. Is that it?
That's the news.
Thank goodness for that. That is the news here on Midweek Motorsports. Globecast
Radio. All the week's motorsport news. Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Globecast Radio.
International motorsport every Wednesday.
F1. Sports cars. Rally cars. American racing.
Midweek Motorsport.
With John Hinton.
Wednesdays at 8 PM.
It's a definitive motorsport chat show on radio. Interviews, news, you phoning, texting and emailing with questions and comments. It's interactive. A magazine show for motorsport fans that you can be a part of.
Midweek Motorsport.
Wednesdays at 8 on Globecast Radio.
On Globecast Radio. Sky Channel 0157 and 0157.org. Globecast Radio. The Globecast Radio channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Just after 8:30 here on Midweek Motorsport. Hello, I'm John Hindhoff, and on a packed programme tonight, we still have Tony Jardine back on the programme. Always good to have TJ. I'm sure we'll have a laugh with him. Declan Brennan had a very busy week last week with the two Gatorade 150 duels and, of course, the Daytona 500 on Sunday here on the ovals in the next hour of the programme. We've also got a brand new car to the UK market. I've been spending the last couple of days down in Brighton getting to grips with a brand new Audi. Perfect for the summer. More about the new Audi TT Roadster. That's the convertible to you and me later on in tonight's programme. But a studio guest when we come back, and one of our favourites, a real friend of the show, Liz Halliday, joins us next on Midweek Motorsports.
Unlike other stations, we have no barriers to our music or sports coverage. We're not tied by formats and rules, which is why you'll hear music from all the decades and coverage of all the sports you want to hear about, but usually don't. The Globecast Channel, home to sport.
Hey, it's Midweek Motorsport live from London, and joining us in our air-conditioned studio, Liz Halliday has remembered, in fact, that it is 800 degrees in here without any aircon at all, has dressed appropriately and sensibly, dressed for the height of summer, despite the fact that we're far from that here in central London. Liz, welcome back to Midweek Motorsport.
Hi, thanks for it.
Well, how was your holiday then? I mean, you know, you've done, what have you been doing since the end of the season?
Oh, well, I guess I had a little bit off at Christmas, went and saw Mom and Dad, and past that, been putting the horses back into work and just pushing on, and been trying to find a drive for a very long time up until a couple of weeks ago.
Right, let's talk about that first of all, because you have got some very, very good news as far as all Liz Halliday fans are concerned, and there are many of them out there, I can tell you. I spoke to you in January at the Autosport Show, and you were not a happy little bunny then. There was not the trademark Halliday smile then, was there? Because things weren't going right at that time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this year's been really tough for a lot of people, especially Especially in the ALMS.
Turn your phone off. See, it's so popular that even as she's sitting here, Liz is getting offers of work on the phone. I am absolutely certain that is somebody ringing up with an offer of a try.
Go on, another one, yeah. It happens every hour, actually.
Every hour,
so.
On the hour?
Yeah, literally.
So, come on, then. So, there
anyway,
you were, then.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's just been a real struggle. There's been a lot of changes in ALMS, especially, and, you know, a lot of factory teams have come in. So it's hard for some of us that are in that in-between stance where we'd love to be factory drivers but aren't quite yet. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a struggle. And also, obviously, budget is an issue. And, you know, I've got some really great sponsors with Izon, and but, you know, there is a limit to how much money I have this year. And, you know, as we all know, sports car racing is expensive. So.
And we must make the point, again, I know we say this to pretty much all the drivers that come on, and you yourself as well, but you are still in the situation where you need to find budget to take to a team to get yourself a drive, despite how well you've done in the past.
Yes, I am. Yeah. I think a lot of that is that I've come up really fast through the levels in a short amount of time. So really, nobody knew who I was at all about a year or two ago. Mm. So you know, it's not like I've been around since I was, you know, 15 doing in England doing go karts and stuff. Mm. But yeah. So yeah, I am still looking, you know, pretty much full time for sponsors this year, for next year, and for this year as well.
However, the good news is that although we may be losing you from the bulk of the American Le Mans series, you are not going to be twiddling your thumbs this year, are you?
No, I will actually be racing.
Are you going to throw that phone out of the window here?
Right.
I just wish this was on the TV, because if you could have seen Liz's face there as the phone went off again. How do I turn it off?
That was voicemail, actually.
Okay, so you still haven't worked out. Very nice phone, by the way. Very.
Oh, why, thank you. Yes, it receives email and everything. Here's a little plug for BlackBerry.
Is that BlackBerry? That is tiny.
Yeah, it is. It's the new one.
I have not seen one that... Oh, don't show my wife that. If Eve sees that, that's it. We're dead. We'll never have...
This is what we talk about on Midweek Motorsports now, is, you know, technology. Liz's new phone. Technology,
No, this is Gadget Girl.
Absolutely.
Gadget Girl. Welcome to Gadget Girl. Right,
anyway.
Going back to what we were talking about, American Le Mans Series, we're going to lose you from that, but you are going to be having a drive, and that's great news.
Yes, yeah. I got a fantastic offer from Team Modena to drive their DBR9 Aston Martin, which is really cool. It's a car that I've been impressed with ever since it first came onto the track in 2005. So, yeah, it's going to be a big challenge and a big change, and I've never driven the car and going to get my first go in it at Sebring.
The emails flooded in from a couple of weeks ago, and we mentioned that we would probably have you in again, and rather than read out individual names and upset people, what I'm going to do is just group them into upset people that I leave out, should I say. I'm going to group them in, and the first set of questions were really about this change from the ALMS to the new programme. Now, you kind of touched on it now, saying how the American Le Mans series is, but how did that come about, Liz, and how was that... How was that decision-making process, basically? How did you go through that between the end of last season and getting that deal done a couple of weeks ago?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that, you know, the ALMS has been wonderful to me, and I've had such a great time there. And to be fair, I did work really hard to be back in that championship. I'm not going to lie. I did really want to be there, and they all wanted me to be there, and everybody sort of worked hard to try and help me be there again. But, you know, you can't change circumstances, and things are the way they are. So my main goal was to at least be at Sebring and then try very hard to find, you know, a budget and a drive and what have you for Petite and Laguna later in the year, which I'll be trying to do. And I'm just still be involved there. So on that side of it, that has come about, luckily. And the next, you know, best option was the LMS, obviously, which I haven't done a full championship in. There are some fantastic tracks, a few of which I've driven in FIA GT.
Yep.
So yeah, it's not by any means a downstep for me. It's just a different route.
Ian from St Andrews was one of the many people who said, do you feel as though it is slightly a step back to go into GT racing rather than being in the prototype that you were in last year?
I wouldn't say that, no. I think a GT1 car is a really challenging car to drive. And, you know, the Aston Martin is certainly not a step back in anything. I think it's well known as one of the finest, or the finest GT1 car around right now. And, you know, I think every great sports car driver has to be able to drive everything. So the way I'm looking at this year is that, if anything, I'm going to learn a lot, and it is going to be a big challenge. And hopefully I will come away from it a very strong GT1 driver as well, and then I can have my pick of the lot next year. That's my hope, anyway.
Quite a lot of the tracks bikes, in fairness, and this is a point that has been picked up by a few of our listeners, the GT1 times actually aren't that far away from P2 times.
No,
and certainly
aren't,
the top speeds are almost identical in places.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, at Le Mans last year, we really struggled to pass the Aston Martins and the Corvettes in a straight line. We had to outbrake them. I mean, we couldn't get them in a straight line. And I think some of the, you know, the changes in restrictors and stuff will change that a bit this year, and with the aircon systems involved and all that. But still, yeah, they are very quick cars. They're not slow, and they do keep pulling a bit longer than the LMP cars do, because although, you know, they're very quick to start, you know, they do hit sort of an aero barrier, whereas all the horsepower in the GT1 car, I think, keeps it pulling a bit longer.
Sure.
So, yeah, it just depends on the track, really.
And also on that, the other question that has been coming across, it's been a while since you've driven a GT car now, since the Porsche days, of course.
Well, Lister.
Of course. Do you know, I forgot about that as well.
Better apologise to Lawrence Pierce right now for that one.
Lawrence, yeah, otherwise my life will not be worth living. I forgot all about that. And clearly most of our listeners have as well, because the emails that are talking about fitness levels. Now, I know from talking to you that you would say that driving a P2 car, you have to be top fit. And despite the fact that a GT1 car is a bit heavier, then that fitness is going to just carry over into there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issues in a GT1 car is obviously heat is a big issue, and which hopefully will be better this year with some of the regulations they have on heat inside the cars.
Can't really train for that though, can you? Or can you?
I think
work
actually
out with sauna.
I actually asked my trainer about that. But what I'll be doing at Sebring is the practice days. I'm actually going to wear a long sleeve shirt and no cool shirt on a few of the days, at least for a few laps out, just to
see what it's like.
Make a more hostile environment than when I have the cool shirt. It's going to be that much nicer. At least that's my current plan. I think that's a big issue. Not for the helmet, but they do have a lot of air ducting into the car. That's really, really good. Pro Drive has worked on that. And also we have a very good cool box, sort of cool shirt system. So I think that'll be good, and insulated water and stuff, so it stays cold. And you know, it is what it is, and obviously I'll have a gear lever again, so that's another thing.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Which is fine, because you know we had issues with that at Le Mans and stuff, so I've had a little practice. But isn't a problem, but that is another physical factor that I think you have to face, and just the whole positioning in the car, where your body is. I mean, I've got a bad back, and for me the prototype's more comfortable, and you know I've just got to face the fact that I'll be more upright again in a GT and just get comfortable again. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
It's going to be a new challenge, and if I know anything about you, I know that you like new challenges. And so, in that respect, actually, you must be really looking forward to it on several different levels.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be a really big challenge. I can't say it won't be, especially having never driven the car, and which is nobody's fault. We got snowed out of our one test day. So,
you didn't take it?
It's not the team's fault.
Bit of snow on the ground.
Yeah, and they stopped the day entirely. So,
Where was that?
It was supposed to be at Donington, and actually.
Oh, was that day that was snowed out? Yeah,
yes,
I saw the pictures of that.
And unfortunately, the car had to go to Sebring on a container, so nothing we could do really. It wasn't anybody's fault, but so that side of it is going to be a big challenge. You know, I am going to be feeling the pressure to be quick straight away. I've got very good co-drivers, and which is a great thing.
What do you know about the guys that you're driving with?
Well, I'll be with Antonio Garcia for the whole year, and he is amazing, very, very fast, widely known as one of the quickest guys out there, to be honest. And I watched him race, I believe it was Bahrain in 2005, and he was very impressive there. So,
third driver for the longer races?
I'm not sure if I can disclose that, because I'm not sure if anything's signed.
Fine.
There's a few possibilities for Sebring, and then a different one for the season, and I think that's being done up. I think most likely it will be Stuart Hall for the LMS.
Right.
That looks like it's moving forward.
Okay.
And, possibly an Aston driver we all know very well for Sebring.
But I wonder who that might be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I heard a little whisper about that.
Did you?
And I wasn't sure whether we could talk about that.
Which would be great, really, because then I'd learn a lot. So.
Well, if it's who I'm thinking of, he'll have a good time as well, because he's a top bloke, and he enjoys his racing from start to finish. But we'll keep our fingers crossed for that, and I'm sure we'll find out either from yourself or from the other party when that is signed, sealed, and delivered. Well, keep our fingers crossed for that, because I think he'd be a good addition to the team,
particularly
for Sebring. Well, let's talk about what you have been doing then since last November. Presumably not just sitting around. You look like you've been out in the sun somewhere, because you've got a little bit of colour in your cheeks.
Oh, do I? It might just be this really hot studio room that we're in.
I'm melting. we've talked about this before. You've got to split your life between your motor racing and your horses. Now, when did the equestrian season finish, or did it ever?
It finished the week before Laguna Seca.
Right.
So, and it
and when
starts.
Does it restart?
Well, technically, it starts the same week as sort of Sebring.
Right.
I was going to go to Portugal again this year, but I've opted not to so that I can be as ready for Sebring as possible this year.
Hmm.
And I will be starting up basically straight after, will be my first event with all three horses.
Far be it from me to tell you how to live your life, Liz, but do you not think it would have been better to find two sports that actually worked opposite each other in the calendar rather than exactly the same time?
Well, yes, it would be ideal, but you know, unfortunately winter sports weren't my high point, so you know, I did skiing for a while.
Luge.
I tried skiing, did a bit of racing, injured myself profusely, so
hence the buck.
So I've ended up in summer sports, unfortunately, which run in the exact same season.
You're listening to Midweek Motorsport. That's the voice of Liz Halliday, who will stay with us as we continue to talk to her. Keep the emails coming in, studio at 0157.org, if you like to have a little chat with Liz. She'll be here for a little while yet. Don't go too far.
Every week we bring you all the motorsport news wherever in the world.
Midweek Motorsport,
the international motorsport magazine on radio.
Globecast Radio. If you want to know more about Globecast Radio, where we are, who's doing what, and more about the cars we test, log on to www.0157.org. Features, interviews and reports. A website for those that love cars and motorsport. www.0157.org. The website of Globecast Radio.
Midweek Motorsport on Globecast Radio.
Joining us on the telephone is Tony Jardine. Always a pleasure, Tony. How are you?
I'm very, very well, John. Yourself?
Good, thank you.
Good.
We don't seem to have had very much off-season, though. It seems to shrink every year, doesn't it?
It sure does. No, we haven't stopped either, so, but glad of it.
Now, Tony, we want to talk to you about a couple of things tonight. First of all, this Bridgestone e-reporter. Now, I think this is the third year, and we've talked to you about it in the last couple of years. And my goodness, it's exploded, considering this is only the third year of us actually sitting here talking about it. It's gone bananas.
It has. It's really good. I mean, this year we've had support from James Allen from ITV. We've had support from Sky Sports, as you know, where I'm now working, and people have been pushing it as well. But we are now seeing young journalists going through from fledglings who've gone into this great competition and getting jobs in the sports media, especially motorsports media. And this is across Europe, John, as well. We've got people working at Autobild, you know, people at Crash.net, even people working for computer magazines. And we've got some real success stories. And that really gives us a kick, I have to say, through Bridgestone eReporter.
Now, would it be fair to say that some of these people might have got there through their own hard work and endeavour, but effectively what the competition's done is it's focused them, and in some respects the winners particularly have had a real step up, Tony?
Yeah, no, I would say that's fair enough, because they are very talented Europeans. They're from across the board, you know, there's Polish, Belgians, French, British, Scandinavian, and they're all entering the competition. As you know, it's open to students aged 18 to 30 who are in full-time education. And we've got 7 finalists this year. But what is happening is that we're seeing the people come through. They've finished their full-time education. They've been successful in the competition, and they've gone through and got jobs as a result. So I think the high-profile nature of the competition has helped them get more high-profile jobs, because
yes,
they're coming in and saying to these prospective employees, well, I've been working in GP2. You know, I've been out to these 2 and 3 races. Mm. And look, read my stories. They got stories with Lewis Hamilton from last year, and you know, all the top runners. And one of them, young Rupert Mannering himself. I mean, I read his stuff as one of the judges, and I've read some of the Europeans who are working in English as their second language, and it's remarkably good. It's brilliant.
Actually, Tony, that's quite embarrassing for people like you and me, because I dare say if someone asked us to write 500 words in French on anything, we couldn't manage it.
No,
I struggle in English.
No, you don't. You're
easy, easy title.
Yeah, easy. No, it is embarrassing for us. But then again, you know, they do teach throughout Europe English as a second language, and they're very strong in it. But nonetheless, it's impressive the way they write and the way they work in English. And I have to say, that's across the board from young Spaniards, Belgians, French, etc. And it's great to see.
One of the things, Tony, that I think is so good about this, and you touched on it when you were talking about people being able to say, I have already gone to GP2 and spoke to X, Y, and Z, and here's the work. One of the things when, and I have to think back a very long way, of course, to think about when I was starting out, it isn't the easiest thing to go to a race meeting as a working journalist rather than a punter, which some of these youngsters will have done like we did when we were younger, and actually know the ropes and know how to go about things. And though people, I'm sure you'll be one of them, who'll shout me down and say, yes, because you were the shy retiring one in the corner hind off. But it is actually quite foreboding, isn't it, when you first go there to work?
Yeah, of course it is. And that's one of the advantages that a Bridgestone e-reporter campaign can offer to these, you know, young journalists, because Monza last year, I think there was four of them there, and there was a big press function with Ferrari, and we managed to get four tickets to take the guys in. Well, they met loads of the international journalists, and in particular, I would say a couple of the Belgian journalists and certainly four of the British journalists spent time with these cub reporters, let's call them, introducing them to people, giving them advice. And as I say, people like James Allen, who's been very supportive, he's come to lunches with them at Bridgestone. He's sat with them for an hour, talked to them, given them advice. And, you know, it's really helped them. And some of them have come away determined, whether they win the competition or not, to be journalists and to work in the sport. And clearly they love the sport and they're very enthusiastic, but they get job satisfaction. So it is nice to see, you know, a big worldwide player like Bridgestone with this sort of impetus and getting something really solid out of it. And I enjoy working on it, I have to say.
Do you know what I find really nice about it? That everyone that we've spoken to in the last couple of years when we've been talking to yourself or any of the finalists about this Bridgestone e-reporter competition is just the general enthusiasm from these youngsters. And I think that's essential to our sport, Tony, because it's tough for anybody to get time on TV or radio or space in the newspapers nowadays. And sometimes that enthusiasm will just push the piece or the feature or the package that little bit further with a news editor and actually get it aired. And that's great for the sport.
Well, it is. Yeah, absolutely it is. And the other thing is that we both know things are changing. You know, the electronic media are taking over. It's getting bigger and bigger. And quite a few of our success stories here are going on to work, you know, in the internet side of the sport as well as the magazine side of the sport. And that's also great to see. But one of the things that I would like to do is just to remind anyone who's listening that the closing date for entries is Saturday the 31st of March 2007 for this competition.
So just over a month, that's about, what, 6 weeks away?
Yeah,
so this, what do they have to do, Tony? Do they have to submit some work?
Or yes, they do.
Right, okay.
Yes, they do. So written entries should be submitted online, and I'll give you that, and it's at www.bridgestone.eu/e dash reporter, and we'd call it hyphen, e-hyphen reporter.
Right.
And they'll be judged by a panel of international media representatives from the world of motorsport. So that includes James Allen, and myself, now as Sky sports broadcaster, and I hope you'll be watching A1GP over the weekend.
How can we not?
Motorsport news editor Jim Holder.
All right, Noddy,
Noddy Holder, yeah. Bridgestone Motorsport press officer Rachel Ingham, and then the GP2 series media manager Will Buxton. So that's the panel of judges. You're talking to them one of them now, but they're basically, if they go onto the site, you'll see what the competition is about. You'll see how you submit entries and get them in, and as I say, get those in before Saturday the 31st of March, and we'll be looking at them all and making our initial judgments.
And what we'll do as well, I'm looking at Tim in the corner. We'll make sure that link goes on to the Globecast Radio site as well. Yes, he's nodding at me.
Oh, that's very kind.
That's www.bridgestone.eu/e-reporter.
That's correct. That's
right.
Great.
See, I wrote that down, Tony. I know that
very
surprised
nice.
You as well. Now,
a good journalist you are.
I've found a pen that worked. That was the hardest thing in here, I tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were having a little chat with Debbie before we spoke to you.
Yes.
Now, we were talking about possibly a possibility of some of the finalists maybe doing a package for us here on Globecast as well.
Oh, brilliant.
So that I hope we can make that happen, and
yes.
We'll continue talking to Debbie about that.
Great.
Because everybody that we've had on here, we've really enjoyed talking to. So,
yes.
And as you say, multimedia now, I'm afraid you can't have all your eggs in one basket. You've got to be multitasking,
you've
haven't
you? You've got to be.
Tony, thank you very much. I think it's a great thing you're doing. Well done with the work on Sky Sports as well, by the way. It's good to see some sense being brought to the proceedings.
Thank you.
especially if I'm going to get up in the middle of the night. I want someone who can tell me what's happening, mate.
Absolutely.
Cheers, Tony. Good luck with it, mate.
Thank you. Take care, John.
Big boys and their toys. Road tests, bikes and news on and off the tracks. Motors and music. Globecast Radio.
More from that Tony Jardine a bit later on this week's Midweek Motorsport. Monday and Tuesday of this week, I was down in Brighton on the south coast of England. As you know, Midweek Motorsport and indeed Globecast, not just about the sporting side of automotive, it's about the industry as well. And there's a brand new entry into the very competitive coupe and cabriolet market here in the UK. We've had a sneak preview already here on Globecast of the new Audi TT Coupe. Well, over the last couple of days, I've been getting to grips with the brand new convertible, still to go on sale in the UK. But of course, we're there first. Find out what I thought of my first drive in the new convertible from Audi, the TT Roadster 3.2 with the S-Tronic DSG gearbox. That comes up next here on Midweek Motorsport.
Midweek Motorsport
with John Hindhoff.
Globecast Radio.
The Audi TT Roadster, that's the convertible to you and I, takes many of its styling cues from its coupe sister, as you might expect. For me, with the roof up or down, it's a good looking car. Drives very well with none of the rattles or squeaks that sometimes are associated, even now, with even the upmarket convertibles. Audi have decided to go for a canvas top, and that pays real dividends. It takes up a lot less room than a steel folding roof, and because we've lost the back seats of the coupe version, there's virtually no difference in the boot space, and that's quite good news because it's not the biggest boot in the world, but come on, it's a sports car, it's not an Audi A6 estate. Driving with the roof down at 55-60 miles an hour, the electric rear blind is up between those two stainless roll hoops that have become a design classic behind the head of Audi TT drivers. Despite the fact it's only 8.5 degrees, I'm quite comfortable. Heated seats, a good heater and pretty good airflow around the car means that I'm only in a fairly light jacket and a sweater. I haven't had to wrap up and look like something from Scott of the Antarctic to enjoy some open air motoring. I do like convertibles. It transforms a normal everyday journey into a bit of an adventure. All right, it is about getting the wind in your hair, and you'll certainly do that in the Audi, and if you've got longer hair you might need to have a cap or a woolly hat at some stage. There is still just a little bit of a draft coming round behind your head even with the wind deflector in position. But there's just something so cool about driving around, particularly when, like now, the light is fading, everybody else is making their way home from work, and you're sitting there with the roof down, pretty warm, seeing, hearing and smelling everything about the countryside. It really transforms the journey. Now, the coupe and the TT share the same platform, and that means the engine options and the gearbox options are the same. This is the DSG, the very clever 6-speed, which is a paddle shift manual or has an automatic mode as well. But there are cogs in the gearbox, and for me this is one of the best options that you could possibly have, other than the heated seats and the convertible, of course.
The car is not remarkable. It hasn't turned heads today, and this is new to the UK, so people haven't seen it before. It does look rather like the old car on steroids, and it's none the worse for that. A little bit sharp around the front end, a little bit curvier perhaps round the back. I like the styling. The TT's grown up a little bit. But which one would I choose, the coupe or the soft top roadster? Well, stay listening to find out.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
And in the next hour, you will find out whether I preferred the coupe or the convertible Audi TT. Convertible yet to be released in the UK, but we have driven it first here on Globecast Radio for Midweek Motorsport. Also, more of Liz Halliday. She's nipped outside to cool down, get herself a drink. It is particularly sweltering in the studio tonight. It's a shame we don't have a convertible studio, really. We could just knock the roof back on that at the touch of a switch. That would really work. It was a busy week at Daytona, and Declan Brennan had his ear on the oval, his review of Speed Week to come in the next 60 minutes as well. But next, it's Tony Jardine here on Midweek Motorsports.
The Globecast Radio Channel, home of live sports coverage, where it just keeps on coming.
Tony Jardine is back with us on the phone here on Midweek Motorsport. And Tony was a competitor at the weekend in the first-time WRC event, Rally Norway. And Tony, one of the things I wanted to ask you, you've competed in this event before it was a WRC event. Did the WRC status change the rally at all for you?
It did a fair bit, because I was just on the other side of the mountain doing the first round of the Norwegian Championship last year, and they used some of the stages, but not all of them. But it's a huge leap from a national championship to a WRC, and the organisation was unbelievable, because there were over 100,000 fans over the 3 days. I think they lost count, to be honest, because you were going past them, and they looked like four or five deep. Really? The flags were waving. You'd come over a crest and get, you know, the waft of barbecues and sausages and beer and God knows what.
Warm
and
vodka,
the bells were going and so on. But on one stage, one night, there were 15,000 people, and there was traffic for miles. You could see it all. Yeah. But the organisers anticipated everything. They had all these little back roads for the competitors.
Very good.
We went in, we came out. We went in, we came out. And we had great information. You know, they were really friendly.
Do you know if the charge for access to the stage is there, Tony?
They did.
Ah, right.
They did.
Okay. Well, that logistically is a nightmare in itself, to be quite honest. Doing ticketing and things like that.
It is. I mean, we know Rally Island's going to be free, but there were lots of Brits there. There were lots of Irish fans. Mm-hmm. People who'd made the journey across, and they weren't disappointed, because I was with Sean Moriarty, who was my co-driver for Motorsport News, and he was talking to lots of them for his story on Sunday night, and all very, very positive vibes. So the competitors were happy, the spectators seemed to be very happy, and we've got a rejuvenated rally championship at the moment,
absolutely,
with three different winners and three Fords on the podium for the first time since 79. And you know me, I always talk to you about the approachability and accessibility of rallying, even at WRC level. We went to see Grunholm before the start. It gave us 5 minutes of a chat about the stages and did some pictures, blah, blah, blah. It's fantastic, Malcolm Wilson chats, but we were using an M-Sport Castrol back Fiesta.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice, great little car.
Proper little car, too.
Proper little car. Running all the Fiestas at the back. But the other thing is, if you were doing a Wales Rally GB and you were running at the back as we were, you'd be running through some pretty rough stuff.
Yes.
We had lots of fresh snow. We had ice. We had minus 20, minus 5, minus 3, plus 1, slush, rain, mist. You know Lillehammer at the top where they had the Winter Olympics? I mean, we ran two stages over the top there in pea soup.
Really?
And
That's scary.
Moriarty, demand from Southern Ireland, he's giving me, trust me, you know, it's flat. You couldn't see a hand in front of your face. But you know that bit where, and everyone will know what it's like, that people who ski anyway, when you get that whiteout.
Yes.
And because of the fresh snow, there were no tracks.
Right.
So you could see for about 20 metres, and I'm looking for the poles at the edge, and you lose that equilibrium. It's a horrible feeling. And because there's so many, the crowd was so deep, I said, sure, I can't do it, mate. I'm going to have to back off. Because I don't know if I'm going to hit a snow wall or a pile of people.
No, you can't do that.
So you can't do it.
Would it be fair to say that the character of the event was preserved, but the logistics and everything else that needed to be stepped up to make it a WRC event were actually achieved by the organisers and the guys behind it?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah, most definitely.
Good.
They were very, very keen to ensure that everything was spot on. I mean, they had a big service area they call the Viking ship. It's a big upturned boat, and they had all the top teams inside there. It was an auditorium. It was beautiful. And our service area outside for everybody else was really, really well organized. The test stage was well organized and so on. So they did a lot of the things by the book. Fred Gallagher, who was observing for the FIA, he was one of the ones that actually went off the road, believe it or not, on the road section.
I'm not going to let him forget that.
You've got to talk to him about it. He was in an FIA Subaru thing, being driven, it has to be said, by one of the local drivers, but they were going against rally traffic and fell off the road. Fred was in a big snowdrift, you know, and this thing on his side. No, he didn't like that.
How did you get on, Tom?
We were 46 overall.
Right.
We were sixth in the class, and there were still 20-odd cars behind us. And we really, really enjoyed it. The last day, we had fantastic visibility, and we really had a good run. And as I say, even the Mitsubishis behind us didn't catch us. The last stage was 44 kilometres.
Oh, great.
You can get your teeth stuck into that, can't you?
When you're out again, Tony?
We're out this coming weekend on the Sunseeker, Friday night and Saturday, but we're going out in the little Ginetta.
Oh, really?
Yeah, going out in the Ginetta.
Bit of a change, then?
It'll be a change, yeah. we bit of a contrast, because we've taken a lot of interest in the 1400, because with Sony and the Junior Championship in Ginettas.
On the track,
Yeah, on the track. Now they're taking a racing car, and they want to make it into a one-make 1400cc car with a series next year.
Mm.
So by getting some profile for it and running it and so on, as they are with BTRDA, that's what we're trying to do. But the interest, as you know, is a sports car going rallying has always been successful.
Yeah.
Whether at the top end it was a Stratos or an 037, you know, it's a big interest.
But old Porsche 959s, and even go back to the 911s, when you see some of the old 911s doing
brilliant.
This stuff.
Yeah. You know,
and the old big old Haleys, if you go back a bit further.
Yeah.
Magic stuff.
You could. I mean, the little kit car, there was a Clan Crusader.
Built in Washington? Tynan Weir, mate.
Well, there you go. And you remember when Andy Dawson actually won a big rally in one of them? They were a great little rally car.
Hillman imp engine strapped in the back of a little space frame.
Yeah, there you go. You see, you're on it. You're nearly as old as me, aren't you?
I think I may be, Tony. We'll see you at the weekend. Sunseeker, first round of the MSA Hankook Gravel Rally Championship.
Yep.
And we'll be covering that Friday night on the pier, is it? The usual
thing
at the promenade?
Usual place, down past the chippy.
Oh, well, don't stop. I know it's hard for you. Normally. Have a good weekend, Tony. Thanks
for
speaking to us.
Great to speak to you then. Cheers, John.
Midweek Motorsports with John Hindhoff.
Broadcast Radio. Pit to the paddock, track to the stage, Globecast Radio covers it, and covers it in full. Nowhere else can you get such comprehensive news, results and interviews with the people that matter. Globecast Radio.
Globecast Radio.
For people who love their cars at speed.
Midweek Motorsport, John Hindhoff, joined by Liz Halliday in the studio. And our thanks to Liz for coming in to see us before the start of the season. Remember that next week we are on one of our special little trips out, one of our season preview programmes. It's the ALMS preview, and we're going to Lola. And we're going to do the manufacturer, not just somebody called Lola's house. I'd just like you to know that, Liz, you know, just in case you thought we were being...
I did, actually. I know a few Lolas.
Just nipping down to Lola.
Yeah.
We will be going up to Huntingdon and sitting down with the boys from Daily Sports Car, plus Martin Barin and the rest of the team up at Lola, talking about their season. They've got a lot of interesting projects on there as well. And hopefully catch up with a couple of drivers. We're going to try and see if we can get Ben Devlin up there to talk about the BK Mazda programme, which is tremendously exciting. That's all next week from 8 o'clock. Tonight we'll plough on with our special guest, Liz Halliday. Talk of that, actually, you've got to be a little bit disappointed, or are you? You tell me. Are you a little bit disappointed to be out of that P1 P2 battle in the ELMS? Because this year it looks daggers drawn all the way through, doesn't it?
Am I disappointed to not be in an LMP2 car this year? Not really. Not in ELMS anyway. Unless I was like becoming a Porsche factory driver out of nowhere, then
or
yeah,
an Acura
great.
Driver.
Yeah, bring it on. But yeah, in anything other than those, no, I didn't want to be there, to be honest. P1 would have been the ideal world, really. I mean, let's be honest.
I mean, your old team, Intersport, John and Clint Field, they've made the jump to P1, and quite frankly, Liz, they didn't have a choice, did they? Because they've got 8 brand new cars effectively there, which, and this is no disrespect to them, are all of those 8 cars potentially are quicker than the car you drove last year?
Yeah,
straight out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to them, the time they put in at the test at Sebring was really good for that car, and you know, I think they did a great job for that. But I definitely think they've made the right move to go to P1, especially this year. I mean, of all years, it was the one for them to make the jump, because there isn't any competition, and it'll be a great year for them to cut their teeth and get used to a new car and the tires and everything, and get everything up and running so that they'll be awesome in 2008.
Are you a bit disappointed that you couldn't do a deal with those guys to step up into a P1, or was that not even on the cards when you were talking to them?
No, we had there was no P1 opportunity when we were originally talking. That it came up around about the time that I was doing this deal with Modena.
Right.
But you know, I'm not disappointed to be where I'm going. I am, you know, I will miss a prototype. I'm not going to lie. You know, I love driving prototypes. I think everyone knows I do. But at the same time, I do think I will probably learn a lot this year, like I've said. And you know, I don't know what the future will have. You know, I'd like to do some testing in a prototype or even Petit Le Mans this year in one, to be honest. I'd love to get in one again this year and prove that I can still drive them.
You leave behind some, even if it's only for a short time, and you do go back in the future, you leave behind some very happy memories with the American Le Mans series. You were very well liked over there, one of the fan favourites, and some tremendous performances. I remember when you took the start at Infineon. Was that that was the first one?
That
was the first one when you were in the car.
Yeah.
And you took the start and did the first stint, and I remember how buzzed up you were when you got out of that car and talking to Graham in the paddock afterwards, in the pit lane afterwards. Those memories though must just be superb for you.
Yeah, I mean, awesome. Yeah, and I had such a good time with Intersport, and they're a really nice bunch of guys, all of them. You know, Clint, John, and the whole team. And you know, I will miss that a bit. You know, we had a lot of good times and you know, a lot of great results. But you know, to be honest, I won't be leaving the LMS behind forever. I can't elaborate on that too much, but I think most people will probably see me at perhaps 4 of the races this year, aside from Sebring and Petite. Yes, I won't be in a race car, but there's a very good chance I will be doing something. I don't want to...
Singing the national anthem?
Hopefully something TV related.
Oh.
But I don't have anything tied down yet, but I will hopefully still be there because, primarily, I want to keep my relations with ALMS.
Absolutely.
And with the fans, and with America. Yeah. Because I am American, naturally, and I'd like to be back there one day soon. So that's sort of my hope, is that that's all going to pull through, and I'll still be in and around the series a lot this year.
Well, don't forget, if you find yourself at a track and you've got nothing better to do, you're very welcome in the booth.
Cool. I'll plan on it.
We've always got a space for drivers who can express themselves and
give us a little bit
of an insight. let's get back to the matter in hand then. We were touching on what you've done over the closed season. How much competitive driving have you done, Liz, then, since the last race of the season in November 2006?
Competitive driving, you mean on a track or on the road? Because...
Well, I presume you're a model of decency on the road.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, I say that because I've basically done none on a track since then.
Really?
I've done nothing competitive, no. I've done a little bit of testing recently. I did the Sky One show, the race, and that was obviously minimal driving for myself.
Got a couple of emails about that. We're going to ask you about that in a moment.
That was more instructor role, more so than actually in a car. But, yeah, so very little, and I'm trying to do sort of something each week up to Sebring, so I've got a lot of help from various people trying to put me in different sorts of cars and just get me as ready for Sebring as I can be.
What was the last race type car you were in then?
I drove a K-Drem on Saturday at Silverstone, which was very good fun. And
have you
on
done
the
one
GP.
Before?
Yeah, I've actually done a lot of teaching in them for Formula Women, but I've never sort of had an instructor in them or really just been on my own to push one. So,
quite raw little cars,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah, I had a blast, really good time, and passing a few Porsches and stuff and all that, and it was quite good fun. And
was that just an open test day, and you jumped in there and got some?
It was a track day actually, so I had an instructor with me, who I've worked with before, and he's fantastic. And yeah, it was really good, just sort of try and get my skills back together again, and do a lot of time in a race car. And I'm also racing at that circuit this year, so that was another bonus prize.
And was that on the full track as well?
Yes, it was. Yeah,
cool.
So it was great. Yeah. really good.
So I could quite fancy a little go on a catering round there myself.
Yeah,
but that
awesome.
Would be a lot,
quite
a lot
good
of
fun. Yeah.
And doing some go-karting, you said, in the next couple of days?
Yeah, I'm going to do some karting tomorrow, actually. And my karting experience in my lifetime is fairly minimal, so it'll be really good. It's proper karts, so be good for me, I think. And, you know, just anything I can do to make my overall skills better, I think. And I think everybody knows that karting's one of the best way to do that and one of the cheapest. Mm. So, yeah, I'm sort of taking anything I can get my hands on at the moment and just be on a track and trying to get better.
We did get some emails. Quite a few of our female listeners, Emma, the Chalk Monster, emailed in and asked about the race, as did a number of other people. First of all, how did you get the gig?
Yeah, actually, I think the way it came about was Graham Glue, who used to work for Formula Women, actually recommended me to, I think maybe they'd gotten in touch with him asking for women instructors
all
or
right,
something.
Go on,
yeah, and then they got a hold of me about a year ago now, and it all just took off and came about quite easily after that.
Now, I think it's fair to say that most motorsport enthusiasts didn't have a tremendously high opinion of the programme after they'd seen it, but one of the things that shone like a beacon was your input to it. Everybody that I've spoken to, and the emails back this up as well, say that you were not an aggressive instructor, but you generally seem to be helping people and actually doing the job properly rather than trying to be a television star. Now, was that deliberate, or is that just the way it happened, or is that just your style?
Well, I don't think I did it to become a television star anyway, but, yeah, I mean,
well,
it's a great thought of it, but, yeah, I mean, I wanted the girls to win, 100%,
yeah.
And, you know, I've always enjoyed instructing, and I've done a fair amount of it, and, you know, we wanted them to do their best, and to be fair, they came on leaps and bounds from their first day, and it's because they worked hard, and I think that was both Steve and I, that was our main thing, and, you know, we didn't get as much camera coverage as we'd been told we would, actually. Mm. And the celebs sort of got a bit angry about that at the end and refused to go on the show one night if we weren't on it. So it was quite funny, really.
Really?
And that's probably behind the scenes news I'm not supposed to say. But yeah, they weren't real happy about that. So yeah, it was great. It was a really good experience. And, you know, I think they all worked hard and we pushed them hard.
I think one of the biggest comments that we had here when the show was on was that in some respects the danger is with a show with that it can make motor racing look too easy, because everything's compressed into a short time scale. Nobody got shown doing their odds test or anything like that, and everything else that goes around it, and basically you only seen half hour or an hour chunks. But I thought what you were doing, particularly with the girls when you were instructing, I thought that was the part where you could really see people going, right, okay, I need to get my head round this, and actually build up the skill level, which I think was the most important part of what you did there, to be quite honest. Because otherwise it would have looked too simple. It's like all these celebrity shows, we can teach you to be a hairdresser in a week and cut somebody's hair or whatever. Well, motor racing's not like that, is it?
No. I mean, it was really hard for them. And remember, what you're seeing is a condensed version of a whole day each time they did that. So, you know, it really was long, long days for these people. And, yeah, they were pretty much in the dark to begin with. Mm. Some of them had some experience, like Brian Johnson and Melissa Joan Hart had done a little bit. But
She drove the Panos at Washington.
Long Beach as well, I think.
Yeah, she did Long Beach in the Pro Celeb, and she drove the Panos at the Washington GP when we were there.
Oh, right, okay.
She drove
I think she'll be at Long Beach again this year, actually. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, in the pro thing again, I think, yeah. But yeah, no, they all came with a lot of different pressures on them, and you know, like Tamara obviously has grown up with that, and she had a lot of pressure on that side, and you know, Jenny puts enough pressure on herself where she's actually an absolute firecracker, that girl. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed with her, and they all were great. I mean, they all worked really hard, and I think that, like I say, that it's so condensed on the TV that you think everyone learned it in 5 minutes, but these were really long, late nights for all of them. They did all pass their ARDS test.
Yeah.
They did work really hard to pass them.
Yeah.
And, it was surprisingly better than we all thought it would be, to be honest. They were much quicker than we thought they'd be.
Did you see, either from the guys or the girls, anybody who really had some talent there who could possibly go on and do something with that?
I would say both Brian and Gary, 100%. Gary's got sort of an extra smoothness to him. Yeah, he was very relaxed in the car. Yeah, he did.
He used
to do stunt flying and all that. Yeah. So he was really chilled out in it, and he's got a very analytical mind for racing. Like when we were teaching him how to heel and toe and all that, mm-hmm. just the way he sort of analyzed stuff was very relaxed and just broke it down mm-hmm. the way you need to in a racing car. So I think he definitely could, now, as well as Brian.
Brian Johnson, he's done a lot of historic racing in the States. He's got
a lot of
British racing cars.
Yeah.
I've seen him at Sebring, in fact.
Yeah.
That's where I first met him.
He might be there this year, actually.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, it'd be cool. I'd like to see him again, yeah.
Well, that's where I first met him. He's a big hero of mine, obviously, from my neck of the woods originally, and obviously growing up with the music scene as I did.
Yeah.
He was one of my... He was good, actually. Once he calmed down, because he went at it a bit like a bull in a china shop, didn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. That's just Brian's way, though. You know, he's a bit lively, but you know, we like Brian. he did well, and I think, to be honest, of the girls, I mean, Tamara's obviously got talent, mm-hmm. a lot of it. She mm-hmm. just needs to keep her head down and keep her head on the job, I mm-hmm. think. And both Jenny and Melissa actually mm-hmm. have a lot to them as well. It's a lot of it's mental for all of them, mm-hmm. which I suppose is my same issue when I'm in a race car, so I can sympathise with that.
Well, with any sport, there's always going to be a quite a large degree that is confidence-based.
Yeah.
Apart from skills, you can teach people the skills, you can't give them the confidence.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And that's important. Let's go back to your racing season this year then. The LMS in the Aston Martin with Modena, mm-hmm. that's what, 5 races this year?
Six
races this year.
Don't forget Brazil. Everybody keeps forgetting it.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Awesome. Yeah, yes. I'm really looking forward to that.
Quite a late start of the season, isn't it? April time? Like
yeah, it's mid-April at Monza, yeah. I guess, I think, didn't they start that late last year, though? I think they did. It leaves room for Sebring, is the thing.
Yeah.
I think
and there's only
the
one before Le Mans, Liz, or is there two before Le Mans?
There's two. Right. There's Monza and Valencia. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then obviously we have Sebring, which is great. And, you know, that's sort of our hope to get the Le Mans entry is to prove that, you know, we're making the effort to go off to Sebring and one of the only teams that are. So I'm hoping that's going to be the push through for them.
And is the plan, if the team gets the entry, that you'll be with them at Le Mans as well?
Yes. Yes.
You must be delighted about that.
Yes. So that was a definite big plus point for me in joining the team. And so that's really hoping, because I will definitely be in that car at Le Mans if it's there. So that's 100%.
So the only thing that can stop you being there is
the entry.
Not getting the entry.
Yeah, exactly.
That's out at the end of March, is it?
I believe so, yeah.
After Sebring.
Yeah. So hopefully we can really perform at Sebring and give that little extra shove to the ACO to put us in there.
Have the team been to Sebring before?
No, they have not.
No, I didn't think so.
I think the Hans has, the chief engineer has been, and me, obviously, but I think that's about it.
Are they ready for what they're going to find there, and are they ready for how hard that racetrack is?
You know, I think so. They're really, really professional people. I actually had a meeting with the technical director not long ago, chatting about the circuit and going over every fine detail that we could about surface changes, everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're really doing everything they can to be as ready as possible before we even get there. So I think people will be surprised. They're not approaching it in a casual manner.
And the package is great. We know that the Aston is a fantastic race car. We know how competitive it's been at both sides of the Atlantic and, in fact, worldwide whenever it's gone out and raced. Michelin tyres?
Yes, we're on Michelin tyres, which is great, because not really had the opportunity to race with Michelin yet, so it'd be a good association as well, and looking forward to sort of getting a good relationship with Michelin, really. And it's important to say that this chassis, I believe, is the most successful chassis in all of the DBR9s.
Really?
Well. Yes, I believe that is the truth.
Ooh. Now, you see, you'll have to let us know exactly which one it is, so we can go, oh, yes, it came third then, second then, and we'll trace it back through. It's always dangerous to do this, but I have to ask this question. What goals, what do you set yourself for this year, for you and the team? I mean, there's a lot of good competitors out there in the Le Mans series. You know who you're going to be up against at Sebring. It's going to be those pesky yellow cars. But they're not unbeatable, particularly not at Sebring. But what do you know about the rest of the season and what, if any, goals do you set yourself?
Well, I mean, I think it's a pretty stiff GT1 field. I'm not sure how many cars it is. I think it's 8 or 9 or something. But they are all very good cars.
In the LMS,
In the LMS, yeah. So I think that's going to be difficult. A lot of professional drivers involved. For me, I want to step up a whole nother gear, really, in myself, in my mentally as well, driving. I just want to be a whole nother level and prove that I can be a full-time professional driver. And you know, I'm sure a lot of people will be watching what I can do in it. And, you know, that's going to be my big goal, is just work on the fitness and work on everything and just push as hard as I can every time I get in it. And, you know, I'm going to say the same things I said last year, where everyone said, oh, what are your realistic goals? And yeah. I think we're never going to go out in a race without wanting to win or without planning to win. And, you know, I think to go in with any other outlook is not worth your time. So, right. Yeah, we'll go out in every race, hope to be on the top step of the podium and push as hard as we can.
Some of the other emails we've already touched on as we've had our conversation, but let's just reiterate a couple of things. Petit Le Mans, Laguna Seca would definitely be part of the plan. You'd still be looking towards that with possibly a Porter drive.
Well, I'd love to. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Right now it's what I want to do. I do need to find some more sponsorship for that,
right.
Which is a big goal for me for the rest of the year.
And presumably, you know, you've got to find a team that's got a space, which is still going to be the problem.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that this team will be going over there, but who knows?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I'd love to be back in a prototype or even a GT1 or anything really, just to be there. But it'd be great.
Two great events.
Yeah, I mean, they're fantastic, and I've won at Petit, and you know, I'd like to have another shot at that. And I just would like to be there as a part of the ALMS again at the end of the year and sort of, you know, space my way through it so I'm still a part of that season, if you know what I mean.
Remind me how many clashes there are between LMS and ALMS this year. They're not actually on the same dates, but there's some quite tight ones, aren't there, like weekends apart?
Yeah, there's a few tight. I'm not really sure. There aren't any that directly clash.
No, I don't think so. For once, thank goodness.
Yeah, I think the Nürburgring race is very close to Lime Rock. It's all
right.
The sort of mid-season ones are really crazy. Petit actually doesn't clash at all, and nor does Laguna. There's
so
no worries.
That gives you the opportunity.
Yeah, those two are wide open, and they actually don't clash with my horse schedule either, which is surprising.
Well, let's have a quick final word about the horse riding this year. You've been making great strides forward over the last couple of years since we've been talking about this. How's it going for this year, and how's it looking for this year? Because you've had a couple of really good prospects in your stable, haven't you?
Yeah, I've actually got all three fully functioning at the moment, which is amazing. Knock on wood. My advanced horse is back in work and going well, and I will have all three of them competing in their first event shortly after Sebring.
Mm-hmm. And do you ride each of them, or do you ride... That's hard work.
Yeah, it's kind of busy at the moment. And I ride a few others on occasion for my trainer as well. So, it's pretty busy. I think they're all going really well. At least two of them, I'm hoping, will be at advanced for a lot of the year at top level. So, and I'm hoping that my horse that's been injured, that's now back in, is going to push on and maybe qualify for 2008 Olympics. So, not select, but qualify.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
No, absolutely.
But even to qualify would be a big accomplishment.
So, what sort of events are you going to be doing this year? Many of the same that you've been doing next year? Are you going to step up to the next level, or where are we going to see you competing with the horses?
Well, I mean, mostly just around England for the one day events.
Yeah.
And then obviously we do the international 3 days, and I'll be doing couple in France, maybe one in Holland, which I've done before, and there's quite a few good ones in England actually that I'll be doing. And just hoping that as long as Fox is my advanced horse, as long as he stays in one piece, then he'll be doing a few 3 stars and hopefully getting me up there.
Do we ever get to see you at places like Burley and places like that? Is that the aim, to get up to that?
Oh yeah, that's the aim, 100%. And I've got two horses that would get to that. I think they have the physical ability and the mentality for it. So I'm hoping that maybe even, you know, if all went really, really well, I could be at Burley next year. But it'd have to be a really awesome year without any injuries. So to the horses, or myself, I suppose, but to the horses.
Do you, I mean, obviously you've got a trainer for the horses, but who's managing that team? Are you doing that, or is there someone doing that for you?
Well, I mean, when I'm around, I do all my own work on the horses.
Right.
I'd quite like to not do all my own work on the horses at the moment anymore, because it's busy. But I've got a trainer, Joe Meyer. He rode for the New Zealand World Games team in 2006. So, and he's been a really great support to me, and also just some of the other girls in the yard that keep the horses fit for me when I'm away, which is huge. So.
Liz, thank you very much for coming in to join us. As
no
ever,
problem.
It is a pleasure.
Thank you.
Once you manage to turn your phone off.
Yeah, sorry about that.
we can say for sure we'll see you at Sebring.
Yes, 100%, you will.
Okay.
And I'll hopefully come up and join you in the box.
You come up to the booth. It's a race that you can hear along with the rest of the American Le Mans series here on Globecast. The race is on Saturday the 17th. We'll be starting, I think, on the Wednesday for the first of the practice and then the qualifying sessions through the week. Liz, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Every week we bring you all the motorsport news wherever in the world.
Midweek Motorsport.
The international motorsport magazine on radio.
Globecast Radio.
Still to come before the end of the show, Declan Brennan with his ear on the oval. No Call My Hoof this week. We mentioned this earlier on, but we've had a couple of emails to say why Are you not mentioning it? We're on what the Americans would call a series break. We've done 12 episodes. We'll be back after, well, I think it's about 2 or 3 weeks' time, Tim, isn't it? Yeah? Okay. The letter N will be what we'll be doing on Call My Huff when we come back, but it's going to be a couple of weeks because we've got some special shows to come, of which more later. Declan, once we can get him on the phone from Boston, from Worcester, Massachusetts, we will have Declan Brennan with his ear on the oval. Lots to talk about Daytona 500 et al. Your emails, please, to studio@0157.org. But next, we're back on the road. Love cars, love sport, love music. That's what we say here at Globecast Radio. And we've had the chance this week, or at least I've had the chance this week, to drive the brand new Audi TT Roadster. That's the soft top convertible. As well as its sister car, the hardtop. Which one would I choose and why? Find out next here on Midweek Motorsports.
Cars, music, sport. What a combination. Globecast Radio. What you want now.
So, a tale of two TTs, two Audi TTs. The hardtop coupe or the softtop roadster convertible. Well, I'm sitting in the convertible now, and it's very difficult not to think of this car on a warm summer's day or even a crisp winter's one with the top down, enjoying every bit of the English countryside around you. Clearly, there's also a bit of poser value as well, because as I am now in the gathering gloom here in the south of England, driving down the dual carriageway at 65 miles an hour, you certainly do get some looks when the temperature is down around where it is, but it's not unpleasant, and I'm a big fan of open top motoring. There is a price premium to pay for the convertible, of course, and I'm not sure that I'd be willing to put my hand that bit deeper into the pocket. The 26,000 pound coupe and convertible market in the UK is keenly competitive. The Audi ticks all the boxes, great style and great engines, nice set of gadgets, and of course the electrically operated convertible roof. Not even a little catch for me to worry about in here. And I do like the fact that the roof works up to 25 miles an hour as well. That's handy if you hit a sudden downpour. But surprisingly for me, and despite the fact I'm still driving the convertible now, I think if I was pushed into a corner that I would pick the coupe. There's no back seats to speak of, they're pretty useless to be honest, but there's just something about the way the coupe looks that I really like. And oddly, the coupe, even with the 2-litre FSI engine rather than this wonderful 3.2 V6, is the better package. It's just a bit more nimble, a bit sharper, a bit more edgy. And I like that. The two-wheel drive non-quattro with the FSI motor might not be the most expensive of the Audi TTs that you can choose, but I think it's the best value. And certainly, if you like your cars on the edge, then it's for you. It has much more of a driver's character to it, and you feel as though you're making a difference. The old car wasn't like that. So for me, it's the coupe with the four-cylinder FSI engine. Can I have one in a nice dark grey, please? Whichever way you cut it, though, the Audi TT, whether in convertible or coupe form, is going to be a big, big hit. Audi have got everything right. Before the start of the summer, they'll have 3 new coupes or convertibles available. The 2 variants of the TT, the new A5 is due in the UK just before the start of the summer, and of course the supercar, the R8, is just around the corner as well. Audi are a firm that's going places. Somehow I think the path to your local Audi dealer might just be getting a little more well-worn this year.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Joining us live on the telephone from Worcester, Massachusetts. I even remembered where he was this week as well, which I think is probably a first to me. Declan Brennan has his ear on the ovals.
I had to take it off the ovals because it would have been hit by a flying car. I would have thought
by a car on its roof.
Yes.
Over here in the UK, unfortunately, everyone who TiVo'd or Sky Plus'd it on Sky on Channel 5 didn't get to see the last seven laps, so there's a lot of very upset people wandering around. And
excuse me, why is that?
Because, despite the fact that it was a pre-recorded show, they ran over by over an hour, and they changed the EPG for the first hour, which your Sky Plus, like your TiVo, would have picked up, but then they forgot to do it for the second bit, and despite the fact that if you had the extra 10 minutes on the end, you still missed the last seven laps.
Oh my God, so there'll be a lot of irate people ringing Channel 5, I'd imagine.
Because what are you going to do at that time of the night? It starts at midnight, you're going to watch the first 20 minutes, half an hour, by which time there was no race on. I think they took about 35 minutes before they actually got into the race. And then you put the rest on Skype on a smart recorder and you go to bed and watch it the next night.
Of course you do. Or in this case, not, as the case may be. Oh, dear, what?
Can you imagine sitting there with that race building up as it was and then the little banner come up saying, end of recorded programme?
With that much time left, they probably would have red the car's red flag in turn two, which was before the restart and the all hell breaking loose.
Well, of course, it depends how they edited, but yes. there was still seven laps to go, so it must have been still running when everybody's ran out.
Well, what can we say? But what can we say about the two guys involved? You know, Kevin Harvick does the double. He wins the Busch race and he wins the big one.
And not as unusual as one might think, actually, because there's a few people have done that in the past.
Yes, Darrell Waltrip did it back in 1989, I believe.
Did Junior do it as well?
Junior did it in 2004. Yes, he's probably Benny Parsons has done it. Obviously, that's not supremely unusual. What is remarkable is when we go back and look at the tape again, or go on YouTube if you have to look at it, is Kevin Harvick came for about 3 miles behind with a half a lap to go.
He actually came from 127th in the park.
Because it was extraordinary. Mark Martin knew, I think, that if he stuck the car
on the yellow line.
Yeah, on the yellow line, that was it. Nobody was going to go by him. The outside lane disappeared. Nobody was there. At one point, as they went onto the backstretch, Jeff Gordon pulled out with a bit of head of steam. I actually turned around to my good lady wife at one point and went, oh my God, Jeff Gordon's going to win this.
And he just went backwards?
Suddenly he disappeared, but suddenly Matt Kenseth basically pushing Kevin Harvick along. Yeah. How, down the outside.
But Dex, you know when we say that this sport, NASCAR particularly, is often a sport of inches, how close was Harvick and Kenseth to getting put in the wall by, was Kurt Busch, wasn't it, who was trying to get by Martin, and they must have squeezed by the thinness of a piece of paper.
Well, of course, the accident at the end was fundamentally caused by the number 5 car, who'd been like a rocket ship all day.
Yeah.
But got it completely out of sorts, basically just before the tri-oval, and he put Kenseth in the wall, Kenseth put everybody else in the wall, almost everybody else wrecked, and of course we had the extraordinary situation where Clint Boyer in the 07 car finished 18th, upside down and on fire.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to come across the line in the Daytona 500.
Yes.
Did that make the newspapers, Dex?
I'm sure if I turned on ESPN this moment, I'm just put on, they'd be replaying that incident. I think they've just got it on air. I think that they're actually changed clothes down over here now. They play the national anthem on that image before bedtime.
How many times have I said, and I've said it on this programme, do you know, I know it sounds stupid, but I never understand why people don't have sponsor logos on the bottom, and everybody laughs at me, but you know, all right, 99.9% of the time, it doesn't make any difference. But when an incident like that happened, can you imagine if he'd had a sponsor logo on the bottom?
The problem is his sponsor is Jack Daniels, and it just doesn't sit right if your car is upside down and on fire with Jack Daniels written across the bottom of it now. Now, and of course, the beauty is that he was the 07 car, which upside down looked like 20.
It really did. The way there was the curve in the shaft of the 7, it really did look like 20.
But let's go back and let's move back, because we have, of course, the issue to resolve here of the fact that if NASCAR had stuck to its rules, there is the distinct possibility that that Matt Martin would have won that race.
Well, he said that, didn't he, in the post-race interview. He said, I was waiting for them to throw the yellow. I thought they would freeze the field.
Yep.
And they didn't.
They decided that because the incident was so far behind, it was, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Foinaven. If anybody listening to this is old enough to remember.
And the Grand National.
The one horse that got over the fence at the Grand National. And all the rest just ended up piling into it. And that is literally what we ended up with. We ended up with two Foinavens. We ended up with Mark Martin and Kevin Harvick winning by, like, considering the pack went around, you know, all together, 22 cars within a second and a half of each other at the start of the lap. By the end, they were like 4 seconds ahead.
Who was third, by the way?
Sorry?
Who was third?
That's a very good question.
Because I never saw the third place car come across the line.
Third place was...
And I just thought to myself, you know, it would be nice to see who was third.
It was David Reagan, wasn't it?
David Reagan came through the rookie. Very good.
Actually, he was sixth. It's a good question. I think it might be. I'm going to have to check now. Because even I'm through the... I've got a list of data of all the interesting do you knows from the event on my screen at the moment. But you know, that's bizarre. In fact, in years to come, that will be a great pub quiz.
Who was third in that race? Whilst you sort that out, just a quick. I don't want to do a recap of the race, but I do want to have a chat about the race because it wasn't a bad race all the way through. To be honest, there was plenty to talk about. David Gilliland losing a lap, fighting like mad to get the lucky dog and get back on the lead lap, and then almost being there at the end from Paul after all his problems. Junior getting badly damaged, pushed into the wall. A lot of people struggling with tapping the wall coming out of turn two.
Yeah, Hendrick's Motorsport loved it.
Mm.
Jimmy
Johnson.
Oh my goodness, what an accident that was. How that was one of the big surprises, how unsettled and how out of shape that car was for the whole day.
He clearly thought he'd saved that after the first wiggle, and he had no idea that car was barely touching the tarmac, because it was... Not very many years ago, that would have resulted in... I think that might have resulted in injury to the driver, because that was one of those horrible, horrible impacts with the wall that you just go, oh, dear, that looked... And it was unabated speed, Dex.
Oh, yeah. It was, and when you watched it from the wall cam,
yes,
you saw how quick and how violent it was. It was really, really something else. It was very surprising, very out of character for Jimmy, but the car really wasn't handling it all.
It wasn't.
But there was, we did, as I said, we saw a lot of that, and even the incident that took away the two form horses of the field, which was Tony Stewart and Kurt Busch.
Well, you and I have different interpretations of this.
Well, I know mine is right as usual, but Jeff Burton was third, by the way.
Jeff Gordon, of course.
Burton in the singular wireless.
Of course, it was Chevy. In the orange car. Yes.
Yes.
The Tony Stewart incident and Bush incident, I did think that Bush was a bit naughty, because I know that Tony Stewart said he'd had a lift in the corner, but even so, I still think he should have been able to. He wasn't that close. He could have. I think he could have. He just didn't lift.
It's the reactions of the drivers to me that sums it all up, and I think they both realised it was a little bit of both. It was Stewart got it out of shape. He clearly was out of shape in the middle of the corner and backed off enough and lifted. He lifted enough because Kurt Busch to go into him, and there wasn't a great deal that Kurt Busch could have done. And as everybody said, one of the things that people were quite frightened about that accident was how reminiscent it was of Dale Earnhardt's accident.
Yeah, that's exactly what went through my mind.
And he was, it was,
And did you see the in-car picture? Did you see how much his head got moved around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a very hard impact. And Bush's was pretty hard, too.
But delighted
that they were both okay. Absolutely amazing, considering he was the form horse of the week.
Yes.
He won Tony Stewart won the Bud Shootout. He won his Gator 150. He was dominating that race, and yet now, if you look at the point standings, he's at the bottom.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Everybody else got back out, so Tony Stewart is last in points at the moment.
Dexter, don't go away, because I want to talk a little bit more in a moment. Just remind everybody you're listening to Midweek Motorsport. We want to hear your views as well. Studio at 0157.org.
Globecast Radio.
International Motorsport every Wednesday.
F1, Sports Car, Rally Cars, American Racing.
Midweek Motorsport.
With John Hinton.
Wednesdays at 8 p.m.
It's a definitive motorsport chat show on radio. Interviews, news, you phoning, texting and emailing with questions and comments. It's interactive, a magazine show for motorsport fans that you can be a part of.
Midweek Motorsport.
Wednesdays at 8 on Globecast Radio.
On Globecast Radio.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Still with us and still ready to talk about the Daytona 500. Declan Brennan with his ear on the ovals. Historic Daytona 500, the 49th running, because we had Toyota in the big show. Mixed fortunes, I think, early part of the week. We got the three Darrell Waltrip cars into the race, which didn't... Michael Waltrip cars into the race, rather, which didn't look likely early on, but no Red Bull team, and that was a big disappointment for them.
Well, it was certainly a disappointment for Red Bull, yeah, absolutely, because arguably Red Bull have the young marquee drivers for Toyota insofar as... fan favourite wise, you know, Dale Jarrett and Michael Waltrip will be right up there. But in terms of the guys who are the future of Toyota, in terms of getting people into victory lane, they are putting a lot into Brian Vickers and AJ Allmendinger. Unfortunately, both of them didn't make the race through no fault of their own. Both of them involved in accidents in their Gatorade 150 qualifiers.
But isn't this what we said, Dex? We said that because they didn't have manufacturer points, owner points, team points, that they are going to struggle this year.
Well, they will, and to some extent they will, but although I think they'll take a little bit of comfort from the fact that they were both competitive in the yes. in their qualifiers. In fact, poor old AJ was doing very well and got taken out of it by Robbie Gordon, who through no fault of AJ's, he ended up putting him into the wall. So really, I think that there's a lot to take away from it. For example, as you absolutely rightly said, there were three Walter Brayton Toyotas in the field, which is terrific. Although the best finish they managed was 22nd.
Which was odd, Dex, because, you know, they did well. What, second, was it, in the Bush race earlier in the weekend?
Well, Dave Blaney's performance in the Bush race was absolutely fantastic, to finish second behind Kevin Harvick, ahead of Carl Edwards, ahead of Clint Boyer, yeah. Martin. You know, there's
some fancy runners there.
If you go through the top 13 runners in Bush, every single one of them were not just and next Cup regulars, but absolute top liners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So for Dave Blaney to come in second, and that's a huge feather in Toyota's promotional cap.
And in fairness, early on in the race, Michael Waltrip in the Napa Auto Parts car, the car looked not bad. It looked actually quite good. He was able to move around in traffic when they were in two and three wide. He clearly had a car that was working well on the high side. He was constantly getting up onto the higher side of the track and trying to draft his way to the front. And he made up a lot of places. I mean, he made up half the field quite early on in the race and then settled into the bottom half of the top 20. But as you say, from then on, really, they didn't do anything at all. Didn't really trouble the sharp end of the grid at all.
No, and there's you know, we've heard all sorts of rumours about sandbagging, and the question is, will they do what they did in Craft and Truck, which is to basically go in, not make too many waves, don't win too early, make people feel better about them, about their presence there, and then, like they did last year, finish 1-5 in the point standings.
Yes.
So, if they're going to do the same thing in a 3-year plan, expect Toyota to be dominating Nextel Cup Racing in 2009. But they won't be that displeased with the start. And we'll see. I think now when the gloves are off, the restrictor plates are gone, and very quick track at Fontana, and I think we'll see them at the sharp end of the grid a little bit more. Certainly running in the top 20 on Sunday.
So many stories from the weekend, we could fill probably 2 hours with them, but we have to talk about Juan Pablo Montoya. He had a great early part of the week, was leading comfortably in the 150 in the Jewel in the second race, wasn't it, that he was in. Was that a bit of a rookie error? Looked like he had a tyre going down and didn't get to the pits early enough, ended up ending his race with a broken hub.
No, I think that was the hub issue. I think.
Do you think that was cause rather than effect?
Yeah, I think that was absolutely. Yeah, that was the point. That was an indication that they had a strong car, and I think that was in fact part of their downfall, because they didn't make any setting changes based on that. They made no changes to the race setup on race day.
Mm.
But when they got to race day, they were massively tight. The car just—he was running at the back of the pack, and I'm not sure if that was necessarily affecting the handling, but the car was just ludicrously tight for the whole. And if you notice his lap times, once the tyres lost any grip on new tyres, he really was struggling very, very badly.
I said to you on Thursday, I thought everyone was giving him a relatively easy time, particularly when he was leading in those opening stages of the second 150. Was it Kurt Busch that was behind him? Was it Kyle Busch?
It was Jeff Gordon and Kurt Busch, if I remember correctly.
And it was early days in that race, and they weren't really pressurising him, and that seemed to help his confidence quite a lot. But in the race, he wasn't a factor at all. I mean, he missed a couple of big accidents by not very much. That would have sharpened him up.
Absolutely. In fact, it was Kyle Busch was behind him, but
it was Kyle,
he clipped Kyle in the duel. On saying that, there's two ways to look at this race, because for him, he did stay out of trouble. He managed to, for the most part, stay on the lead laps. They managed the problem that they had. It's huge learning experience.
Got the lucky dog with about that when that yellow came out, about what, 10, 20 to go, something like that, 27, yeah.
But the key was, and this is what we didn't and was never, and I have to say, to some extent, shame on Fox for not even picking this up. When the yellow came out on lap 164, he slightly overshot his pit box. He slammed the car into reverse and lost all gears. They were pushing the car behind pit wall when it jumped back into fourth. He then went the rest of the way with fourth gear only.
Oh, wow.
Which was a major problem, considering they parked the cars on turn two when they red flagged them. He actually got a push start from Kurt Busch from the red flag position. So the fact that he finished in the top 20 is actually pretty commendable. So he's, and I know as a team, they're pretty happy with that. So, one of the things we didn't find out about, but literally he ran the last quarter of the race with one gear. So good on him.
Less for him to do. I mean, at his age, he doesn't want to be shifting gears, does he? He wants the automatic option.
He did, of course, wreck after the finish line, along with many other people.
Yeah, that, again, though, you can't really put that as a black mark against him, can you?
No. He was one of the ones who, as the accident developed, he wrecked after the finish line, after he finished 19th. He was one spot behind the man who finished. Although, you've got to say, you wouldn't be that proud of the fact to say that you finished behind
the man who finished on his roof on fire.
I just don't think he was showing enough commitment. The guy in front of him managed to.
Surely he could have got past him. He must have had more drive than the guy who was on his roof. Right, very quickly, just a couple of quick fire ones, one or two word answers for these, please. Who was your disappointment of the 500?
Katie Kane.
Hmm.
Was my disappointment of the 500. My pleasant surprise of the 500.
Yeah, I was good at that.
Was Jamie McMurray.
Yes, very much.
Towards the last quarter, he got involved in a big accident, but actually was running at one stage. We got a little gaggle with about 30 to go. We had a little gaggle of Roush Fenway cars, including Kenseth McMurray Biffle. So I was delighted to see him run up the sharp end late on, But
just a little flash of his previous potential, I think.
Absolutely, but even I'll go a little bit further to say, a guy who I was very surprised how well he did, and it bodes well for the future, was Johnny Sauter. Although Johnny Sauter ran very strongly for most of the day, and I think he could really surprise us this season. His first chance to properly run a full season in the Nextel Cup. It's a strong team. They're well financed. We could see Johnny Sauter making some headway this year, but I have to say, Martin, my heart broke just a little bit when Martin didn't win it, because they were talking about it in the commentary box, and I actually graded them. I thought at one stage that Roush were going to gang up and give Martin the victory.
Mm.
But unfortunately, Harvick pipped him by air. And speaking of Harvick and his... Have you noticed what's on his car?
What?
Shell.
Yes.
Who was a massive promotional tool of Shell in his time at Ferrari?
That would be Michael Schumacher.
Right, I'm now putting 2 and 2 together and getting 95.
Right.
But what's the odds that Shell pressure or Richard Childress Racing and Shell decide they want to get Schumacher in the car at some stage this season? And the reason I say this is because you and I have both discussed this on the air, and you were very astute to spot this, is to basically to hypothesise about the fact that sponsors, international sponsors who are in, who are now in Nextel Cup, need to leverage as much as they can out of the sponsorship, because
just in the home marketplace.
Yeah, exactly. This is outside the home market, and they will do it by getting the likes of Schumacher into a car. And if Shell can get him, and Shell could get him into a car, so you never know. Let's leave that as a you heard it here first. If it happens.
I noticed that Shell didn't actually have their name on the car, though. They just had the logo.
No, that's a quirk of the sponsorship rules. Because of the fuel partner in Sunoco, it's difficult for Shell. Shell had to come in under the guise of Pennzoil.
The other thing that we noticed just before, very final thing, because we're a bit tight for time, but the Red Bull cars didn't have all of the series sponsors logos and the fund sponsors that you normally see down the flanks of the car.
They've paid a premium to have them taken off their car so they can run with only their own trade.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think it's $500,000.
So they, what, per car?
Yes, per car.
No.
I want to know, I don't believe for 1 minute that Dietrich Mateschitz is making all his money from selling. Nobody could drink enough Red Bull to fund everything that they're doing, surely. Am I missing something?
Either that, or it's so much more profitable than you realise.
Maybe there's actually a Red Bull spring somewhere. He doesn't even have to make it. It's just coming out of the ground. Maybe it's coming out of the ground.
They say, that's funny. Declan, thank you very much. They move on to Fontana next week.
Yes.
So we'll have a little... chat about that after the race, of course, next week. It's our American Le Mans series preview show next week, but there'll still be time for Declan and our ear on the ovens. Dex, thanks very much indeed.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, mate.
News from across the pond. If it happens over there, hear about it over here on Midweek Motorsport.
Do you know what I was about to say? And that's it for episode... And I can't remember what episode it is, Tim. Where are we?
It's 8.
8, okay. So that's it then for episode 8 of Midweek Motorsport, in our second series.
If only this wasn't live, you could have gone back and done that again.
Yes, well, I think one of the things that people like about this show is its immediacy, its dynamic qualities, and frankly, the mistakes that we make, to be quite honest. Now, special, we've got a lot, we mentioned quite a lot of special programmes last week. Still some to come, easy for me to say. In fact,
all of them to come.
Yes, that's right, of course. And in fact, next week's Midweek Motorsport is a special in itself.
Yes. It is our preview to the 2007 American Le Mans series.
Which would be special enough in its own right. However, we've decided, just to make things a little bit more interesting, we're going to go out on the road, aren't we?
We're going to go to Lola.
Well, at least some of us are.
Yes. You're going to go to Lola.
Yes.
With Graham Goodwin.
I think so. And Malcolm Cracknell.
Malcolm Cracknell and Ben Devlin.
Yeah. And also trying to get some more drivers up there, actually. I was just speaking to someone today who we might be able to grab and take up there. So we'll be having a tour of the facilities. We'll be talking about that new Lola with the Audi engine. Also the BK Motorsports Lola with the Mazda, the new AER Mazda engine. Having a word with Ben Devon about that programme, and also looking for some predictions from the dailysportscar.com guys as to the 2007 American Le Mans series, which looks great in two categories and not so great in the other two. Can we, while we're talking about dailysportscar.com, are we allowed to mention the other thing?
We can mention the other thing. This Sunday at 7 o'clock on Globecast, just to whet your appetite for the Oscars, which are later on in the evening, it's the Daily Sports Car Awards.
Dailysportscar.com Awards, a glittering array of sports cars' fittest and finest people. And fastest people.
Have you got your suit ready yet?
I will have the new... I will be previewing the new dinner jacket. This is... I went out and bought one specially. I have my new dinner shirt as well that Eve bought me for Christmas.
And,
of which more later.
That's you once again with Graham Goodwin. He'll be wearing a lovely dress.
Yeah. See now,
flowing ball gown.
The thought of GG in a ball gown has really made me feel quite queasy. That's the dailysportscar.com awards for Europe, the UK and North America, 7 o'clock this Sunday on this channel.
If you miss it...
Right. Oh, we've got replays.
There are several repeats.
Right. So what? Will it be on the website?
Details.
www.0157.org. Tim, thank you very much. Thanks to all our guests.
Can I tell you about some more specials?
Oh, yes. Go on then.
I think we've episode 3 of the Countdown to Crufts next Wednesday, just before our show.
Been very popular.
And again, that's repeated several times. And Crufts itself is coming shortly.
It's Crufts before Sebring.
It is.
Oh, heavens. I
better get before Sebring.
Better get myself sorted out.
Better start learning about dogs again.
Yeah, reload that ROM then. We've still got the Lewis Hamilton special.
Lewis Hamilton special. They're a Formula One preview, which is the...
Week
of Crufts, but I don't know which day. I think it's on Tuesday.
Well, we'll check that out before next week.
And, of course, this weekend, live motorsport on Globecast with the Sunseeker Rally, the first round of the 2007 Hankook MSA Gravel Rally Championship, live on Friday and Saturday with Andrew Lloyd, Gary Champion, Innes and Alison Marlowe, and John Hindhoff.
Yes, and we'll be covering every single stage. That's it for this week's Midweek Motorsport. Thanks for joining us. Keep the emails coming, studio@0157.org. But from Tim and myself, and indeed all our guests this evening, bye for now.